This is Tom Waddle on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast, sponsored by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
Waddle and Sylvie.
Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
You can spend your time alone, redigesting past regrets.
There you go, some Pearl Jam from back in the 90s.
It just fit. Like, I had never heard that Pearl Jam song, I don't think. Maybe I have it, I don't recognize it. But it just felt like the perfect song for the end of that docuseries.
It was great. And that's how we started the interview with Jason Hare, who had joined us each and every Monday following The Last Dance. And I've got ratings info today on that. But we asked him about that Pearl Jam song. And Jason, how did you come to pick that song for one of the final scenes of the 10-part documentary?
I vividly remember the first time I heard that song. I was studying abroad in 1996, and we were hanging out in a dorm in Galway, Ireland, and one of my friends picked up that album because he was a massive Pearl Jam fan. I, of course, knew who they were, but I wasn't like as much of a fanatic as he was, and we were actually going to see them on tour. It was their first date of their European tour was at this place called Mill Street in Ireland, and we were just listening to their new album. And that song has always stuck with me as this epic song. And even back then, I wanted to get into this business. I was thinking in my head of like what these songs would look like, or what these montages, if I got the chance one day, would look like. And I always had that song in my back pocket. So at the outset of this project, I always knew that was going to be the end song.
Wow. Did you have, Jason, did you also have like the final scenes played out in your mind before all of this actually came together?
Not exactly. I mean, I knew that we were going to start in the mansion and end in the mansion, where Michael's looking out at the ocean. And I knew that I wanted to use that clip of him saying that he just wanted to be respected like the Lakers and the Celtics and the Sixers at the beginning and the end, to kind of juxtapose the young, innocent Michael with this kind of martial artist of a basketball player, this master he had become. But everything else just kind of happens organically. What really hammered it home for me was when we interviewed Mark Vansell, and he was saying that of all of Michael's gifts, his mindfulness and his presentness and his ability to not think in the past or the future, that's what his biggest gift is. I knew I wanted to save that for the later episodes, and if we could, the final one. And then when we saw the footage of him hitting that shot when they're having that long-distance shooting contest, and he drains that shot and is dancing around with his headphones on to that Kenny Lattimore song as if it's a preseason game, and he's going into game one of his final NBA finals. I just thought, this guy is like a different animal. He lives in the present tense all the time. Like the music and the lyrics made perfect sense, so everything kind of lined up for us.
Jason Hare joining us, Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. A couple of compliments that I have for you. I think it's amazing from a director's point of view that you came up with an ending. You found a way in the ending to end it with stuff that we didn't know about. Like, we all know how this ends. And us in Chicago, we know most of the stories, too. But for me, as a guy who is a fan of the Bulls with season tickets, and then I covered the last three championships. One, I didn't know how Michael would react to Jerry Reinsdorf saying what he said. You gave him the iPad, and then he opened up about number seven, and I thought that was breaking new ground. Two, like the story that you got, and I would love to know how it came up, about that final meeting from someone who covered that team. I don't know how many of us knew about that, and I know most of my friends did not know about that story, so congrats on all that.
Well, that thank you for that, and that's a testament to my team as well. I mean, all of us studied this team. I was researching for 2 years before we even sat down to interview. The first person we interviewed was Brian McCarthy, and we interviewed him because we wanted to interview people early on who knew everything there was to know about all these eras because we needed to give our editor some stuff to work with. And Brian worked in PR for the Bulls when there were seven people on the entire Bulls staff. And then Brian went to the NBA to work as the PR director for the NBA under David Stern. And he was by Michael's side at all these events all the way through 98. So when we started out on this project, we wanted to uncover as many stories as possible. And so we did 2 years of research before we ever even asked one question and rolled camera once. So that it came from, it's in a few of the books that I read. And if I showed you the stack of books, it's well above my waist, the amount of pages of research that went into this thing. But it always just seemed so poetic, and it's so indicative of the methods that Phil would use to motivate these guys and inspire these guys. Phil really is kind of a transcendent personality. And that goes back to the present tense thing too, is that Phil was the one preaching this mantra of, you know, Zen and mindfulness and, you know, doing meditation and yoga with the team. All of that is about staying in the moment and being in the present tense. Michael even says it when he's at the piano in the hotel room afterwards and someone says, what are you going to do about next year? He says, just enjoy now. Just enjoy this. We'll figure out October. We'll figure out next year in October. Just enjoy this moment right now. So all of that really is just a product of researching as much as you can, giving yourself as much creative ammunition as you can, and then deciding where to take your shots.
Jason, as Sylvie mentioned, it was a moving scene to have Michael watch the iPad in the comments of Jerry Reinsdorf. Were there other moments when you interviewed him where he was visually upset with Jerry's decisions? Because, like, we've had this conversation now for 5 weeks. You can blame Jerry Krause all you want, but ultimately, the owner can have final say. How much, I don't know if the right word is anger, but how much was brewing inside of Michael with regard to Jerry Reinsdorf not stepping in and stopping some of this commotion that ended up with them disbanding?
I don't know who he holds responsible, if it's one person or if it's a lot of people or if he takes any of the blame himself, although I doubt it. But I'm not sure exactly what he thinks. I think it's pretty telling. If you go back to that press conference after the 97 finals, and we showed it in the first episode, he's still drenched in sweat from winning the title over the Jazz in 97. And people are already asking him, what's it going to take to come back next year? That's what a cloud was hanging over this team in the summer going into this final season. And this is easily findable on YouTube, but he says when I came to Chicago, the team was worth what, like $15 million? And now they're worth anywhere from, I forget what the number was then, but it would dwarf it today. But, you know, the value of the team had increased exponentially. And he says, I don't know what Jerry Reinsdorf is going to have to do. Maybe he's going to have to mortgage his house. Some people are laughing. But he said, we deserve to keep on winning until we can't anymore. I think that's what he was adamant about. And I think that he feels robbed, that he was robbed of that opportunity to at least prove, like he said in the locker room after game six in 98, they can't win until we quit. And they didn't exactly quit because it was kind of involuntary, but it's a question for him to ask him who he holds most accountable. But I know that money seems to be the root of all the problems here, money and ego.
See, people today, Jason, are arguing, oh, well, this makes the Bulls dynasty even more special because they went out on top. I view it more as like a sports, I wouldn't even call it a sports tragedy in that context, because I don't know if it, I would have loved to just seen them try. And if they lost, they lost. And maybe it was a way to keep Michael from ever playing with Washington and only with one team and having a better connection with him in the future. But do you view it through, which lens do you view it through?
Well, it's poetic the way that they went out. You can't have a better ending than that. And I don't know that it could have even ever been more perfect, because there would have always been some sort of asterisk that next season because it was only a 50-game season. But I think that unless they brought Dennis back along with everybody else, it would have been very difficult to get past, you know, a San Antonio team with Tim Duncan and David Robinson. That would have been very tough for them to match up against. Now, you look in the East, though, and the 8 seed in the Knicks made it to the finals that year. So, all hell had broken loose with this contracted season. As a filmmaker telling the story of this team, I certainly think that it ended the right way, but man, I'm so curious. I wish we had some sort of crystal ball and we could see how that would have played out, because they were on their last legs there in the end of 98. And I think that any kind of drama that had occurred in 97, 98 would have only been compounded the next year, unless all those guys got paid, which was basically impossible. Scottie Pippen got a $67.2 million deal with Houston a few months after that season ended. So guys were waiting to cash out.
Jason, I've always asked Silvy this because, as he said, he covered the team for the final three-peat, and he was around the team all the time from an even further distance away. It never felt like Michael was really close with any of his teammates. And I've hypothesized that he did that intentionally so he could ride them as hard as he did to get the most out of them. Why do you think that after sitting with Michael and doing all the research that maybe he wasn't as close to some of his teammates as other guys were?
I think that there's a couple of parts to that answer. One is that it was very hard for him to be that close to any guys because you're spending half your life on the road when you're a pro athlete, and especially as a basketball player, you're playing, you know, week in and week out, day after day. When he goes on the road, he cannot hang out with his teammates. He can't. He can't leave the facility. That's how famous he was back then, that they would have to – his security guards, who have become celebrities in their own right, which is fantastic because they deserve it, and they're no longer with us, but Gus and CT and John Michael Wozniak and those guys, they would have to call the local police in advance if he wanted to go to, say, a restaurant. Right. And they would have to arrange for the police to give him – the space to get in and out of that restaurant. It wasn't like he could just meet, you know, Scotty and Tony in the lobby and walk around and find a place to get a steak. Those guys, even as famous as they were, they could do that. I think Scotty had a bodyguard who traveled with him, and Dennis had a guy who traveled with him, but they could still come and go as they pleased. They were going to get stopped for autographs and all that. Michael comes into a restaurant, the restaurant stops. I mean, the chef stops cooking and comes out to get a glimpse of Michael Jordan. It wasn't like any other athlete of his time. So he couldn't spend time with guys on the road, and that's when a lot of the bonding happens. I also think that when they're at home, it's deceptive. We didn't have any video of this, and I wish that we did. They had a thing, you guys probably know about this, in Chicago called the Breakfast Club. And Scottie Pippen and Ron Harper would come to Michael's house every day to work out with Tim Grover during that second three-peat run. Scottie and Michael got a lot tighter after his baseball stint when he came back than they were before. They were basically, it was like big brother, little brother, when he came back from baseball. And Ron Harper and Scotty worked out every morning, and Michael's chef would make them breakfast at Michael's house, and then they would go to practice. He's still very close with Tony Kukoc these days, I know. Scott Burrell, he golfs with every summer. He's still, I mean, despite what the doc might lead you to believe, he loves Scotty Burrell, and the love is mutual, and they still hang out whenever they can. So I do think that there's a lot of friendships there. Like, listen, we didn't know about this relationship with Kobe and Michael until long after Kobe passed away, or not long after, but at least after Kobe passed away. So who's to say that he's not tight with a lot of these guys? I think a lot of these guys would rather do things out of the public eye, and certainly Michael's going to appreciate if you don't publicize your friendship with him, because he values that privacy so much.
So there you go. That was Jason Hare. He's the director of The Last Dance. I've got ratings numbers for you that I want to share with you coming up next. We had him for two segments. If you want to hear the second one, callers got to ask him questions. Remember to go to the ESPN Chicago app, the brand new ESPN Chicago app. Very easy to listen live and to listen to all our podcasts. But he spent a full half hour with us today. So I've got ratings info, Waddle, and Michael did something in last night's episode that he's not done before. And this surprised me. I want to play that for you coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie, weekdays, 2 to 6.
Follow on Twitter at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87. ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Waddle, let's hear more.
I'm not, isn't that Devo? Isn't that?
Right there.
Is
Isn't that
you whip it good? Yeah.
I was listening to the B-52s driving back from Knoxville.
It took
me back to my childhood.
They've got like two songs, don't they? They got more than two?
They have a ton of stuff. Yeah, they're from Athens, Georgia. They were very talented. There was a lot of stuff there. We would listen to B-52s. We would listen to The Who.
Boy, the B-52s in The Who?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're eclectic. And Prince. That was what was in my cassette container.
That's like the Scott Burrell with Michael and Scotty right there, the B-52s.
Yeah, that's right. But nobody's harassing the B-52s because they were a commercial success.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Yeah. I mean, listen. When the B-52s come on, I kind of listen. Yeah, like the song that came on was more of the kind of poppy song that probably got most recognized. I think it was Rome.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's Love Shack in Rome, isn't it?
Yes.
Rome, if you want to.
Sing it, brother. Sing it.
Rome around the world.
but listen, that's kind of like, that's like poppy stuff.
Yeah,
but they've got other stuff.
You like the
B
tracks of the B-52s?
Well, no, I just kind of there's some other stuff that just take me back to Sharonville, Ohio, when times were different.
Okay, The Last Dance, brought to you by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill. That's why, I thought that as far as look, I know the pandemic, and I asked Jason Hare the question about when it came out. You know, it was supposed to be in June during the NBA Finals. But if this comes out in June, I know it's going to get rave reviews. I know we're going to be talking about it, and it's going to be certainly popular. But is it going to be as popular as it turned out to be? Because the world has stopped right now, and this is really the only thing we can all watch together.
I think before the first episode dropped, you actually projected that he was saving the world by having this thing moved up and presenting it when it was. What did you call him? I think you called him a hero.
He's a national hero. Yes. And I don't want to look, I'm joking, but because I know the real heroes are everybody who's going to work and the essential workers and, you know, nurses and doctors. And no one knows that now more than me, especially with what I've got going on. But as far as from a sports saving standpoint, I think this happened at the perfect time, and I want to play you this and also tell you, I believe the episode 9 of last night. So the first episode of last night was the third highest rated episode of the 10. And this averaged, it ended up according to ESPN, averaging 5.6 million viewers.
Wow.
You know, then when they add in all the DVRs and everything like that, I think the first one ended up when they tallied all the different analytics, it was somewhere in the 13 million range.
Wow.
13 million people watched the first episode.
That's impressive.
It's been a huge rating success. So I want to play you this. This is Michael, and he did something last night that he very rarely has done, and that's go after Jerry Reinsdorf. Krause has always been the target, but they all state why they didn't come back. Phil, and then Jerry Reinsdorf, and it's basically something that was going around the internet yesterday, where Jerry Krause was going to write this in his memoir, where, you know, Pippen was broken down. Pippen won a lot of money. Dennis Rodman only played 36 more games. Steve Kerr was going to get a lot on the open market, would have been too expensive to come back. Luke Longley's ankles were going bad. So, from their standpoint, according to Krause and Reinsdorf, it wasn't going to be worth it, nor did they think that Michael would be wanting to be there for whatever shape they were going to. But I don't think he had to do that necessarily. I think there were different ways you could have done anything in your power to keep Michael and then to try to keep Phil after you kept Michael. And then especially if you wouldn't have done some of the things you did earlier, like say, no matter if you go 82-0, Phil's not coming back. You already torched the landscape, as Gene Greco would say. But here was Michael, and after he heard Jerry Reinsdorf's comments about why he didn't want to go for 7, this was Michael's comments.
In 98, Krause already said at the beginning of the season, Phil can go 82-0, and he was never going to be the coach. So when Phil said it was the last dance, it was the last dance. We knew they weren't going to keep the team. Now, they could have nixed all of it at the beginning of 98. Why say that statement at the beginning of 98? If you ask all the guys who won in 98, Steve Kerr, Jeff Busler, blah, 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 We give you 1 year contract to try for 7. You think they would have signed? Yes, they would have signed. Would I sign for 1 year? Yes, I would have signed for 1 year. I've been signing 1 year contracts up to that. Would Phil done it? Yes. Now, Pip, you would have to do some convincing, but if Phil was going to be there, if Dennis was going to be there, if MJ was going to be there to win our 7th, Pip is not going to miss out on that. You know, 91, 92, I was young, full of energy, hungry. In 98, when you went in 6 out of 8, and yet being just as dominant as you were in 91, that's where the craftsmanship came in. And I think 98 was much better than any other years because of how I was able to use my mind as well as my body.
So was it then satisfying to leave at your peak?
No.
Or is it maddening to leave at your peak?
It's maddening, you know, because I felt like we could have won 7. I really believe that. We may not have, but man, just not to be able to try, that's something that, you know, I just can't accept for whatever reason. I just can't accept it.
So, and that's where I got upset hearing that. And he was confident they could have got Phil. I think if you really wanted Phil and you didn't just place a phone call, you got on your jet, you brought Michael, you said, Phil, we're not leaving until you're coming back. We're going to pay you what you want. We're going to come back. Scotty may want his multi-year deal, and we may have to replace him or try to figure something out here. But there are ways that you could have saved it. And even, like, I don't agree with Carmen that this is good the way it ended. I understand that this means them losing eventually, and maybe in 99. But then maybe Michael doesn't leave the organization. Maybe Michael only plays for the Bulls and never plays for the Wizards. Maybe Michael has a bigger part in the Bulls' future. Maybe then people look to the Bulls as not a team that burned Michael and Scotty and Phil, and the next superstar would want to come here quicker because you've got Michael recruiting someone to his city of Chicago and not Charlotte or D.C. And I just think there are so many, it's the butterfly effect or however way they describe it, that there are so many ways you could have changed history and the perception of the team, even if you didn't win, where it would have been worth the Bulls' while to try it again.
I think if you take the approach like Carm was saying, and you look back with the benefit of time having elapsed, and you look back and you see the pristine, you know, blemish-free record of 6-for-6, I can understand why Carm comes to the conclusion that there's a fairy tale type of ending to it that is appealing. Now, I think that your rebuttal to that is equally understandable. And I think living more in the moment, and I think that's what happens, it takes you back to that moment, and you're like, what the hell are you doing? Why aren't you allowing them to try for an 8th championship 4 in a row, or a 7th championship 4 in a row? And it leaves you pissed, not feeling like, hey, that was pretty sweet. You take more of a micro approach. Now, again, look, if you made me bet money on whether or not they would have won a 7th championship, I probably would have bet no. For a lot of the reasons,
probably me too.
For a lot of the reasons that were mentioned, I don't think Scotty comes back. I think Scotty, you know, listen, we all think the world of Scotty. I think, you know, maybe some think less of him than I think of him as one of the best players I've ever seen play basketball. He also has 1.8 seconds on his resume,
of course,
and that is kind of I would say that's character flaw. And it may lead you to believe that Scotty's not taking a 1 year contract. That
because I was like, you know what? I'm not going to f my summer up.
Yeah. See? So, I mean, like,
and
listen,
he had back
and I could.
Surgery that offseason. Yeah.
I couldn't blame him. I mean, listen, if someone was offering him a contract of $4,065,000, you know, 4 years, $65 million, listen, he decided to take care of him. If that was the path, then listen, you got to do whatever you feels best for you. So again, my money would have been on them probably not winning that 7th title, but I think they earned their. Now, listen, I could fight against myself and say, like you said earlier, the Knicks got to the finals, right? And they were the 8th seed.
8th seed without Patrick Ewing. And they beat Indiana, who you went 7 with.
Right. So I guess real quickly, just to sum up, I think personally, they earned the right. To even if it was Phil and Michael and a cast of others, if that's what they wanted, to put off the rebuild for a year, they had earned the right to do that.
Yeah, and then, and look, hindsight, people go, it's hindsight, Selvy. Well, hindsight's how you judge decisions.
Right.
And the last 20 years have sucked. One trip to the Eastern Conference Finals. You won one game that year in 22 years. That's a bad decision, and you still can't land a free agent. And it maybe has something to do with the way you ended the dynasty. You've got to live in the bed that you just made, or sleep in the bed, whatever it is.
You live in it as well.
You live in it. We are living in the bed more these days. Mark Jean Greco has lived in his bed. Yeah. And Mark, he can't let Michael walk in peace. Come on, Mark. He'll join us coming up next.
Coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
So again, episode 9 of The Last Dance averaged 5.9 million viewers. Episode 10, 5.4 million. That was up from the previous week of 7 and 8. And by far, the biggest, highest rated documentary in ESPN history. Mark Jean Greco is with us. He's brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse.
Boys, great to hear your voices. Wish I could see you in person.
Can't
we saw
let
you
Michael
last night.
Walk in peace.
Hey, listen, that was my job, man. Dog him, dog him, dog him. But, you know, as I said before, all these athletes, the way they look at us is we're like a 10-headed giant amoeba of microphones and cameras. That's all they see. But, you know, you got to get in there. You can't let them just walk in walk out.
It seemed like he, as the most famous sports person on the planet, and maybe the most famous, you know, entertainer at the time as well, he seemed to handle all of you guys hounding him the way you did with pretty much handled it well most of the time. Is that a fair assessment?
That's more than fair. There's no question about it. He may have been aggravated, and we are so overbearing and relentless, but he always gave us something. He'd give us something, even though he just kept moving. So there's no question about that. I think we need a couple more episodes to get answers to some things I thought were left hanging in the last two episodes.
You want to join Carmen and me, because I believe we've got something in the works where Carmen and I are going to give you an ESPN 1000 extra podcast.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to do like the top 10 biggest questions left unanswered.
Can I do a couple now?
Sure, yeah.
Well, one was, I was fascinated. I did not know the story about Phil Jackson asking his players to write little notes about what it meant to be a Bull and their experience on these teams, and then turned the lights out and burned all the notes in a coffee can. Very, you know, Native American ritual type thing that Phil would do. I thought that was fascinating. But Steve Kerr said that Michael wrote a poem. I wanted to hear the poem. I wanted to see what it was. I wanted to hear what some of the guys wrote,
roses
but obviously
red,
they wanted to keep that stuff private.
Hickory dickory dock.
I'm going to punch you. I'm going to punch you. And I'm going to punch you.
Jack and Jill went up the hill. Each had
something Jerry Krause couldn't.
Yeah. Oh,
right.
Wow.
Yes. They all ended with like a rip on Jerry Krause.
Roses are red, violets are blue. Hey, Jerry Krause, you.
You're fat. Yeah.
Well, the other thing was, okay, we know the flu game was actually the poison pizza game, and that five guys show up to deliver it. Not to be confused with Five Guys Hamburgers, a great, great hamburger joint in Chicago. Great chain. But
do we? I mean, do we know that, Tim Grover's going to come on with us tomorrow, because I want to ask that question.
He left the door open by saying, I had a bad feeling about this. So, okay, we were told immediately after everybody called it the flu game that it was really bad pizza, okay? And everybody kind of let it go at that. My question is, was it just a bad pizza that wasn't prepared properly, that sat too long? Or did one of those five guys, or all five of those guys, poison the pizza? You know?
And can we, Pat Boyle wants to find the pizza place.
Yeah, it was the only place open in Salt Lake.
What was the name of it, Mark?
Oh, Pepe's or something like that?
Was it?
I forgot. I forgot. Somebody
said it. Wasn't it in Salt Lake, though?
Guaranteed
Park City? Wasn't it in
Park City? It was in Park City.
Everything in that, in the entire state of Utah, closes at 7:30. So it was the only place open. The other thing is, we got a hold of Luke Cornett and his mom, Tracy, today. Current Bull Luke Cornett
That's really his mom? I thought that was a joke.
It was not his mom, but she is caught up in a crazy social media mistaken identity thing now. Because she was playing with it on social media, and people think she's actually that annoying, foul-mouthed Indiana Pacers fan who was taunting the Bulls bench during the 98 Eastern Conference Finals. She looks exactly like her. So we put that up and had the woman screaming and yelling and interviewed Tracy and Luke today, and it was hysterical. She's saying, yeah. She goes, I had to convince myself that that wasn't me. She's like, wait a minute. I'm not a Pacers fan. I wasn't in Indiana. No, that can't be me. But they look identical. And Luke said, hey, Mom, I know you don't have a mouth like that, but you do get emotional when you're watching my games. And we have footage of her cheering Luke on as a Bull and as a Nick. So it was a great piece. Larry Snyder did a great job on it. But there's one of those crazy sidebars that comes out of this thing.
Do you have video of Jim Boylan cheering him on as he's playing minutes as well?
Hey, he looks like Scottie Pippen.
Yeah, who did he compare him to?
Robert Horry.
Robert Horry with 7 championships.
Yeah. Well, don't get me started on Jim Boylan, but you know.
No, please do.
No,
we don't want to get off track.
Today.
I also thought my favorite part, because he's one of my favorite guys, was the Steve Kerr segment. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was good.
And I was a little bit surprised, but then not surprised at all that Michael and Steve did not talk about their shared, you know, horrible memories of both their fathers being murdered. Mm. And so my first take was, you know, Michael's not going to break down and share that with anybody. And he's not going to seek out Steve Kerr to talk to him about it, to be soothed. And the way Steve reacted to that, it didn't look like he wanted to talk about it either. But I was kind of surprised that the two of them, having been teammates like that, and Jordan respecting Kerr's ability, you know, and Steve, you know, earned his respect, that maybe they would have had a heart-to-heart talk one day sitting in the locker room, but it never happened.
Marky, tell everyone how great Kerr was. I mean, he was the best when he was here.
He's just one of the smartest, coolest, most self-deprecating guys you're ever going to meet. So funny, such a professional, and could have done 15 other things besides play basketball. That smart. And, you know, he just, you know, he says constantly how just playing with Michael, you know, gave him this life, you know, got him to be the head coach of the Golden State Warriors and have a great playing career. But now I understand that there's a standalone documentary on Steve Kerr in the works.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, and he deserves to have one, by all means.
8 championships. Crazy.
Yeah. He is just nothing but class, and he is so funny and so cool. Like, remember we did that bit with the Princess Di impersonator and brought her around Chicago, and I took her to the Bulls playoff game, and, you know, she shook hands with everybody. But Steve went out of his way to play it up. Hey, good luck with you and Chuck. I hope it works out. You know, he's so great.
So great.
He has just the best observations, and he's another one of those. I put him in the Tom Waddle category. A regular guy who's done spectacular things.
With 8 more championships.
Yeah, well,
you have the same amount of touchdowns as he has championships.
That's true.
It's a major
thing. Well, I have one more, so he's still got a ways to go.
Yeah.
Sure he'll get to that, Mark.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, hang in there, because I want you to bring more stuff up about what you saw. There were some good, you know what? You were in everything. There were some good Mark Jean Greco moments.
Was there another murder mystery show this weekend that I missed being gone that Mark was interviewed for?
Yeah, I was in the Agatha Christie thing.
No,
it was like, you know, I told you my brother's all over Netflix, so we got it covered.
Yeah, the Gene Grecos are featured prominently. Wow. I want to bring up, though, rules to playing tennis. And I think you'll be interested. Ooh, yeah, rules to playing tennis.
Oh, can I tease something to you guys? Gene Greco may have more in common with MJ than we thought.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I got into some bad food, and I'm hurting.
Oh, now?
It's called a tease, Mark. It's called a tease.
Oh.
I tease.
Mark, he is brought to you by
Gene Greco. I'm going to go into detail. It's going to be TMI coming out of break.
Mark Jean Greco brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse, which will reopen when it's safe for all Chicagoans. David Flom, Maddie Moore are planning. They're getting ready. Everyone is very excited, and we can't wait.
We're going to have a party there
at Chicago
Huge
Cut
party.
Steakhouse. Marky going TMI next.
It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Hi.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I guess Mark buried the lead. You have a flu game. You've got a flu game going on right now.
Well, let me preface this by saying I really appreciate the fact that management at the station here feeds our skeleton crew here breakfast, lunch, and dinner every single day during the pandemic. It's great. But the rotation has kind of gotten down to hot dogs, pizza, and tacos. And so I think I got a dirty water dog that I kept under my arm for too long. And wow, I didn't leave my place all weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Now, I'm not sure I could have rallied to have a great game under these conditions like Michael did, but man.
No, you would have had Paul Pierce's pants is what you would have had.
I would have had my pants on backwards from being down all day.
Oh, you know what? Speaking of that. The other day, the George Brett game was on with the pine tar.
Yeah.
So then you get so like my, I go, you got to, and the only reason we kept it on, we were about to like watch something for the night.
I know
ESPN
where this
had been
going.
On. Right. And so I said to my wife, I go, you got to see this. And George Brett was just coming on for the home run. And she could not believe how ballistic he went. So I said, oh, you want to see something great from George Brett? Have I ever shown you this? And my favorite George Brett clip is from him in spring training when he talks about getting food poisoning in Las Vegas. And he starts the conversation. It's the greatest opening to one of the Kansas City Royals prospects or players. He goes, hey, have you ever pooped your pants? Except he used the, you know, and then he goes on to tell this really graphic story. And if you've never heard this, Waddle, you remember the story.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You got to Google, just Google George Brett diarrhea, and you're going to laugh your ass off for 3 minutes.
You know what? I thought it was going a different way that Mason was watching and said, Dad, what's pine tar? That looks like poop on his bat.
No. This went to the old Gene Greco story about what your pants, that, you know.
Well, I'm breaking out in a sweat right now.
So what happens if you're sitting on set and you're giving a story, one of the sports stories, and
you got to, you got to do the tighten up, you know, you just got to get through it. And then it's one of those times when you throw your underwear in the garbage and leave.
Why don't you tap out and say, hey, I can't work tonight?
No, that's not.
When was the last time you gambled and lost?
Oh, God. You mean sharded myself?
I think
that's college.
No, BS.
Come on.
You're in your upper 60s. I mean, this.
By the way, happy belated birthday. I was out of town.
Thank you, Tommy. Thank you. Appreciate that, man. We don't count them anymore.
Okay.
I can't remember, really. But it's happened to everybody.
Of course.
By the way, this just in. You think my family dominates media in this town now? My niece, Lee Gian Greco, just got a job at WGN America News Nation. So we're taking over. We're taking over. Yep.
So hey, by the way, can I tell you guys this? This hour is brought to you by Trend Micro Cloud One, the world's leading security services platform for cloud builders. Visit trendmicro.com/ESPN for more info, Mark.
Was this the mayor of, or no, because it was a Nassau County in New York, right? Isn't this where this was from, Meller?
Yeah, she was. Yeah, I don't know what position
she's
she holds.
She's a head tennis pro at the local YMCA.
Oh, I thought she pooped her pants during a news conference. No?
she is instructing everybody during a pandemic how to play tennis.
What?
Unless they're from the same household, has to bring their own tennis balls so that you don't touch other people's tennis balls. With your hands. You can kick their balls, but you can't touch them. I'm going to blush, sorry. Of course, if you're playing with someone in your household, you can touch those tennis balls. To avoid confusion between whose balls are whose, you can use a marker, like a Sharpie, to mark out, to put an X, or put someone's initials on them.
This is what the pandemic has done. It's taken middle-aged people and disintegrated their maturity.
What, you're telling me you never woke up with magic marker on your balls? Come on.
This is the politician, and she's laughing, giggling over the way she is speaking. I mean,
unraveled. Laura Kern of Nassau County. We want to give her proper credit.
Let me answer Mark's question before we go any further. No, I haven't, Mark. No.
Okay. Well, you're in the minority,
with,
I think.
Matt, with no, the no, what when would it be, Sharpie marker?
Again. When I was a child, you would go to school and you would be worried about losing your balls, and so you would write your name on them. Just in case.
I never wrote my name on my balls.
Yours didn't drop till high school, so you didn't have to worry about losing them. Yeah. Now, that was another college experience, I think.
I thought that was amazing. I saw a good movie, speaking of Nassau County. Have you guys ever seen, it's called, I think, Bad Education. And it's with Hugh Jackman. And it's about a school in Long Island.
Wasn't that a Hall & Oates song? Oh, Adult Education. Okay, no, go ahead.
But it's gotten huge reviews. It's a free movie right now on HBO if you have On Demand. Now, I got to give you the cast because
Is it a newer movie or is it an older movie?
Yes, it's like a year old. I think it came out in, it's called Bad Education.
If it's free, it usually like 20% on Rotten Tomatoes.
No. This thing is like 90-some% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
Mark. It's Hugh Jackman, Ray Romano, Allison Janney. I mean, these are all people who have been nominated or won awards.
I think I saw Ray Romano actually pubbing this movie. He's tremendous in everything. He's so low-key and so
deadpan.
It's
a little dark, but it's funny. It's like a dark comedy. And it's called Bad Education. It's a free movie. If you have time and you've not seen it and you don't want to spend $6 on one of those on-demand movies, this one's free on demand on HBO. And it was I thought you guys would like it. Yeah.
You know what I did? Friday and what to watch for.
I tried to watch.
You did?
Two Fridays ago.
Did you really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh,
we
got to
pay more attention to that. Yeah. You know what? I tried to watch the golf. And it was cool at first because you see these guys carrying their own bags and shorts. And they're talking to each other, and there's no crowd, so you can hear stuff on the green. But it looked like somebody was televising an amateur match or some D3 college match or just four guys who went out to play, you know, at the Park District or something. And it got really boring, and they weren't really on their games. So I flip over to NASCAR, and I'm watching NASCAR. You don't really pay attention to the fans in the stands. You're looking at the cars, and all the camera shots are mostly on the cars, wide shot, medium shot. But then when they come in the turn, they go a little wider, and you see the stands. When the stands are empty, all the seats are painted all different colors. So just for that brief 2 seconds or so coming in the turn, it was like real live television looked like CGI fake animation. It really did. It was the exact reverse. And so I couldn't watch either one. So then I wind up going to NFL Network, and I watch Hard Knocks 2017 Tampa Bay Bucks, followed by the Cleveland Browns 2018 camp.
In between trips to the bathroom?
Yeah. I just brought the television into the bathroom, you know.
How about the NFL? Didn't they? Maybe this is something you guys talked about last week, towards the end of the week. But the NFL's talking about,
and the fake crowd. I don't like that. Waddle. Why do we need to be fooled that there's nobody in the stands?
Yeah, I mean that's kind of stupid. See, South Korea Baseball League has apologized for having sex dolls in the stands. Right.
Typical Waddle's World story.
Okay, yeah. So they didn't know that when they were blowing them up. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, yes. I'm
not a big mouth on this mannequin. Yeah,
that's right. Oh, they're yelling, "Oh, Sadaharu! Oh!"
You saved that one for us. You didn't use that for the five, did you?
Yeah, I can't do any of this. That's why I'm on the radio.
Right. Okay.
I can't do any of this stuff.
Mark, feel better. Who was that, Mark? Do you know who that was?
Oh, gee. Is that your wife?
I wish. What do you mean?
I was going to say when you weren't home, was that your wife?
Yeah. I wish I could make her make those sounds. No, that was someone who participated in The Last Dance.
Jerry Krause.
That's a walk-off bottle.
No, I don't know. Who was it?
That was Carmen Electra with us.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Marky, even in conversations on the radio, we bring out that type of response from people.
I love it. I love it, man.
You poop your pants, she moans.
There you go. And another takeaway. We all knew Carmen Electra was not a physics major. She was not a rocket scientist, but
from Sharonville.
She is dumb.
Oh, what? Why do you gotta be like
she
that?
She is just devoid of any.
That's terrible.
You're a name caller.
What's wrong with you?
I'm a bad guy.
We need more love, not more hate.
Yeah, you know what? Go poop yourself.
I think I just did.
Thanks to Jason Hare and Mark Jean Greco. David Aldridge, who is on with Golic and Wingo, leads off the postgame show in 2 minutes, talking about The Last Dance. Jonathan Hood, all about that, coming up at 7 o'clock as he's live and local. Thank you to Abdallah and Meller. For Waddle and Markey, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great Monday night.
Unless they're from the same household, has to bring their own tennis balls so that you don't touch other people's tennis balls with your hands. You can kick their balls, but you can't touch them.
That was a big thrill.
That was fun stuff. That's